What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast, a podcast channel here on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkar, and more importantly, I have the pleasure today of speaking with Dr. Lorelei Bernacki, who is Professor of Religious Studies at the University of Colorado Boulder. We will be talking about a fascinating new OUP publication, The Matter of Wonder, Abhinavagupta's Panentheism and the New Materialism. Lorelei, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Raj. Good to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you on here. And for those of you listening, if you notice anything strange or different about my voice, you know, don't adjust your audio settings. No, I'm not going through puberty. I'm just a teeny bit under the weather. I did a bit of traveling and exposure to four different airports in a few days has probably left me different than I was before. But I definitely am looking forward to chatting with you about your book. Tell us about the genesis of this project. How did you get interested in this?
So I've always been struck by Abhinavagupta's panentheism. And what I'm trying to do in this book is basically two things. So reading Abhinavagupta, when you read about Abhinavagupta, what you get is this idea that there's a great deal of emphasis in the secondary literature on the transcendent component of his thinking. But I just kept noticing how key it was to have the material side of the equation for his thinking. So the title of the book, The Matter of Wonder, we think of wonder as a sort of transcendent state, but Abhinavagupta makes a rather brilliant move. He connects the state that we think of as beyond the body to a fundamental materiality. Okay, so that's doesn't happen anywhere. So it's really quite brilliant. And ultimately, what it serves is it allows him to avoid having a de facto duality. I mean, say you take Advaita Vedanta, you know, with the idea of Maya, really it's a duality. I mean, sure, one can say, oh, but the world is an illusion. It's just anirvachaniya, indefinable, as Shankara says. But if you look closely, it's really a duality. And so Abhinavagupta and his cohorts, they realized that the weak seen here was this really sort of a de facto duality. And so they basically set out to sort of solve this particular philosophical problem. And as a result, they offer a different kind of non-duality, one that doesn't leave matter on one side and consciousness or spirit or sentience on the other side. He does this remarkable thing that is, he understands that in order to have a genuine non-duality, matter has to be a part of consciousness. And he links materiality to sentience. I go into great detail on this in chapter 4, where I talk about Abhinavagupta's conception of the term Vimarsha. So that's one part. The other part of it is, a lot of people, you know, we're thinking a lot about our environment, you know, the ecology, and I've gotten interested in a certain current of thought called new materialism, as a way to sort of think about these things. And one of the things that I noticed when reading a lot of contemporary literature in the vein of new materialism is they really they don't really have any clue about other than thinkers outside of the West, outside of a Western parameter. And Abhinavagupta is actually just really brilliant and quite, his thought and his arguments actually can solve a lot of the problems that a number of new materialists and Western contemporary thinkers actually have. And so what I, another thing I'm trying to do with this book is that I want to reach a wider audience. And so I think that Abhinavagupta's ideas of new materialism can really help thinking through a contemporary sort of theory around new materialism. And I had become, I'd become interested in new materialism and had written a paper for a volume, an article for a volume on science and religion and new materialism that came out in 2018. And it was really just apparent to me that Abhinavagupta is just really a fantastic resource for these folks. He's entirely neglected, as so many brilliant Asian thinkers are. And so I kind of wanted to remedy this a bit because he can help, he can help them think through a lot of these problems. And particularly, one of the things that I think Abhinavagupta can really help with is that his articulation of panentheism is centered around a foundational subjectivity, a first-person perspective.
So a couple of themes, a number of themes. One, just say a quick word. I mean, most of our, much of our listenership will no doubt be familiar with figures such as, well, it depends, I suppose, but say a quick word about, you know, who he is in this context. And then maybe say an ancillary word about what's different in this project about how he's particularly received in Western scholarship, which I think is very important. Please go ahead.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Okay, so Abhinavagupta is an 11th century, 10th to 11th century thinker. He basically, he's a philosopher, a tantric, and he's probably most well known for his work on aesthetic theory throughout India. Beginning about the 1950s, a number of scholars started, beginning with K.C. Pandey, started really looking at more deeply at his writing. And he's quite important for a lot of thinking today. But he's, but also what's interesting about him as a thinker is not only as is he pretty much on, you know, read across India through the centuries, but his thinking is just really, he's a fantastic writer, and his thinking is just really quite it's just really quite profound. So he's, for these reasons, he's really widely revered through, he's been widely used and quoted through the centuries, and he's of, and his writing has also, to some degree, influenced Tantra even in the South as well also. So so you're asking also what is different about what I'm doing with Abhinavagupta's panentheism is he has, particularly earlier on, he's been read more through the lens of transcendence. So, you know, his non-duality is understood along the lines of this is a transcendence that you can attain through this non-duality. And what I noticed over and over was how much materiality is important, and how important it is to his thinking, and how it is, how important it is to his conception of non-duality.
So, there's so many possible paths forward. Might one think that the emphasis of the emphasis on, or at least acceptance of materiality, loosely Prakriti, okay, is that, and this is a question, right? Is that not potentially the mark of a tantric figure or thinker versus otherwise? Would you say?
Yeah, this is good. And now materiality, this is great. He's definitely a tantric thinker with, you know, like, and that's, you know, he's a tantric thinker. It's not necessarily Prakriti that he's using here. Prakriti, I mean, so you probably, I'm sure you already know, you know, the, a lot of tantric cosmology borrows from Sankhya cosmology, but they add an additional 11 categories, okay, above Purusha. And so what they do with these additional categories is they basically, you know, they write in six categories that have to do with the kinds of things that are actually really somewhat Kantian. This whole notion of, like, above the Purusha, there's things like time, there's sort of like neity, which is like this idea of it's often translated as fate, but you know, that's probably an odd translation, I think. But it's related to why it is that a seed, a banyan seed, you know, becomes a banyan tree and not an apple tree, this sort of thing. So there are these categories, a limited capacity to sort of do things, kala. And so there are these six categories that actually sort of like look like, they look almost Kantian structural sort of things that shape the parameters of our world in sort of the seemingly external ways. But for Abhinavagupta, you know, these are not sort of like external categories ultimately. And then above that, he has these other five categories that include that include sort of ideas of how creation happens vis-a-vis a kind of initial creativity, which is a pure subjectivity, which then becomes more sort of sort of focused on sort of the objective side of reality. So much of what he's doing here with materiality is related to this idea of the subject and the object, so on a linguistic level, but also in this idea of subject, object, and the object become whatever is made into object becomes material. Now, that does another interesting thing for us as well, too, because when he talks about an objective-oriented stance, it's things that we in a sort of Western culture wouldn't necessarily think of as matter. Okay, so like, for instance, a subtle body. Okay, even, you know this quite well, but I think, people who coming from a Western philosophical position really wouldn't even...
The sukshma in addition to the stula.
Yeah, sukshma in addition to stula. But, and also this idea of like, you know, manas, the mind, for Sankhya, the manas is always on the side of matter. And so for a Western conception, that doesn't register. But for Sankhya, materiality, what we think of as mind is really a subset of materiality. And sort of this plays into Abhinavagupta's thinking and how it's actually sort of really radical, both for a Western conceptual model, but also I think even what I'm trying to do with this book is to sort of really point out the material quality, how foundational materiality is to his thinking. And it is the case also as well that one of the main critiques that, you know, they give that Abhinava gives of even Advaita Vedanta is this notion that what Abhinavagupta's tantra has to offer is that the world is still real. And you can only do that if you pay attention to what it means to be a world made of matter and the reality having this other component that allows it to be objectified, basically.
Could you say a bit more about the soteriological value of acknowledging and even celebrating the reality of materiality?
One of the ways it shows up is that if you look closely at throughout, say, Abhinava's writing and also others in his school, there's this idea that the world itself is the body of the divine. Okay, so you know, and I think he has a wonderful quote at the beginning of the Arvamadikata, which is the third section of this. Let me back up a little. Most of what I'm doing here is mostly draw from the last thing he wrote, which was the Ishvara Prachavijñavibhriti Vimarsini. It was it's commentary on a lost commentary of this of a text of Utpaladeva, who was his teacher, not his direct teacher, but before him a couple of generations. And these are the karakas on the recognition Ishvara Prachavijña, recognizing Ishvara, which is basically recognizing divinity, God, in this technique. So he wrote these verses, and then Utpaladeva wrote a commentary. Abhinavagupta wrote a commentary. Utpaladeva also wrote a longer commentary, which was lost, and Abhinavagupta wrote a commentary on this lost commentary. And I'm primarily using Abhinavagupta's commentary on this lost commentary, and I'm primarily using the third book in this collection, which is about 100 pages of Sanskrit, and it's called the Agamadikata, which is basically the chapter or book on on what's been revealed, what's come down to us. So Agamas means scripture as well. And in this chapter, Abhinava talks a good bit about also about the tattva system as well, which is basically, you know, the elements that make up the world. So you can see there also this idea of the world here as well. And he's got a wonderful quote in the early on in this work. There's a wonderful section where Abhinava Gupta says basically that if we want to actually understand the self, we shouldn't really listen to folks who say, why waste your time on the materiality of the world? What really matters is understanding the self and enlightenment. And Abhinava says, well, actually, the only way we're going to understand the only way we're going to understand the self is through understanding the world. Okay, and I've talked about this early in the book. I sort of make a contrast also between a contemporary, a modern figure, Ramana Maharshi. There's a wonderful quote where he talks specifically about how you know, we should forget about, you know, the world and the matter and just concentrate on on the self. And Abhinava Gupta takes exactly the opposite approach. He's like, well, what we really need to do is think about the world if we want to actually get enlightened and understand the self.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can't help but draw parallels between how radical the Devi Mahatmya is among narratives and among sort of theological visions that are sort of hidden, not even hidden, but encoded in narratives. And it's utterly radical where, you know, the embodiment is not an obstacle or an obfuscation of the divine, it's an expression of it. And the emphasis on the, every time she emerges, she who's beyond even the great God, she emerges from a body. I mean, the narrative motif is, I mean, it's very clear that they're not just talking about a divinity who happens to be feminine. They're talking about the divinization of Prakriti, of immanence, of embodiment. And although that text, to the best of our knowledge, would have been some centuries, a good five centuries before his time, nevertheless, we see that in the face of sort of what we think of as classical Upanishadic Hinduism, it's still an extraordinarily radical and compelling idea that matter is sacred in some sense.
Yeah, no, this is right. Yeah, it's an idea that I think you do find particularly throughout Tantra, you know, this idea that materiality, its immanence is the divinity is imminent in materiality. Yes. Yeah, so Abhinava Gupta, what I like about the way he does this is he does it in a way that's actually sort of really philosophically robust. And so, and that's, I think, one of the things he has to offer, particularly for thinkers in the West, trying to sort of work through for new materialism, how do you make matter important? You know, because our world today, it's, you know, matter is just a thing. And because it's a thing, you can sort of pretty much, you know, do whatever you want with it because it doesn't have any sort of, it doesn't have sentience. It doesn't have any sort of value because it's just stuff that we can sort of control. And so, I mean, another thing that I try to do with the book that the book is, the book has quite a lot of footnotes. Okay. And the footnotes are, there's a lot of Sanskrit footnotes because I'm drawing from this text that hasn't yet been translated. So there's a lot of footnotes in the book. It's at least a third of the book are just sort of Sanskrit footnotes. But I also sort of try to sort of lead those not necessarily in the text because I am trying to reach a wider audience. And I do also, I frame each of the chapters of the book with a contemporary theme. You know, so for the first chapter, I talk about the idea of viruses as a way of thinking about the boundaries between what's living and what's not living. You know, you can see how this gets to the idea of matter. And so, and then with that, I then sort of get into sort of a basic idea of what's Abhinavagupta's perspective on the breaking point between that which is living and that which is not, and that which is just straight matter. For the second chapter, I talk about a contemporary neuroscience that tells us that really consciousness, you know, is something that our brains hallucinate. I use a contemporary neuroscientist, Anil Seth, to sort of frame this idea to think about, you know, what is wonder and how does the mind relate to the brain in this sense. These are frames which allow me to sort of then get into sort of Abhinavagupta's own thought. In the third chapter, I talk about a little more biology. I thought this was really interesting. You may have already known this, but Darwin actually lost his faith because he came across a parasitic wasp inside the caterpillar. Basically, the parasitic wasp, you know, burrows its way inside of a caterpillar and sort of basically explodes the caterpillar from the inside, which is kind of like, you know, the movie Alien, this kind of thing. And so for Darwin, it was like really sort of like, it was devastating. I mean, he also lost his faith around, you know, his own, you know, deaths in his family. But he talks about this particular sort of insight around the parasitic wasp inside a caterpillar as like this sort of, you know, appalling, you know, reality that makes it that he can't believe in a God that would actually sort of, you know, make a creature that would do this sort of horrific thing. Okay. And so I talk about this, you know, what is this about? Well, this is also very much about who owns the body. You know, is it actually sort of like, you know, we have this idea that our bodies are inviolable and they belong to us. And so from this, I sort of use this to talk about the ideas of like, you know, tantric ideas, Abhinavagupta's ideas in, as well, of the subtle body. And that, you know, as you know quite well, so the subtle body in tantric and many tantric sources, and there are these wonderful pictures you can see even now of like the yogi who's got all these gods in various places in the body. And, you know, Abhinavagupta also has a lot of these schemata as well too. Vishnu is in the throat, Brahma is in the heart. So gods make up the body. With this, just a sort of a way to sort of rethink the idea of agency and the body vis-a-vis the subtle body. And as a contrast as well for Western ideas also, but most Abhinavagupta's idea and tantric ideas of what's the body, what's the subtle body, and who is the agent within this. The fourth chapter, I also I framed that one with around the idea of computer sentience and artificial intelligence. This harkens back to the first chapter. This is to get a sense of like, how is it that we distinguish between that which is sentient and that which is not sentient? And so this is coming to the fore in a big way right now. And so I use Abhinavagupta's ideas of sentience to parse out this issue and try to understand how can we sort of make sense of that. And then the last chapter, which is all about Abhinavagupta's cosmology, the tattva system, the system of, you know, what makes up the universe. For that, I come back to the frame of Darwin's loss of his faith over this parasitic wasp, and to sort of bring it back to how newer biology suggests that plants actually communicate with these wasps to ensure their own survival against these invading caterpillars. So plants actually send out pheromones, which cause the wasps to then sort of be attracted to come to the plants, and then they, you know, lay their eggs and bury them inside the caterpillars. So, you know, so our biology is much richer and more fascinating. And I also have this big interest in this, the science side of things. But what I think, and so I used to start about, I mean, I was in ideas of cosmology and the tattva system and how these can help us think about our own world.
What do you most hope folks would take away from this book?
Well, I what I most hope is that folks will sort of two things. You know, I hope that folks will appreciate the sort of how foundationally materially oriented Abhinavagupta's thinking is, and that it is, in fact, a wonderful resource for us today as a result, and that his panentheism is brilliantly configured in a way to sort of help us think about the nature of subjectivity and objectivity. So that's one. I also hope I'll have a wider readership, people interested in sort of contemporary issues around matter, materiality. And also the other thing I would really like to have this book sort of do is sort of really bring to the fore this conversation around the idea of subjectivity. And because again, most of our thinking today is entirely oriented towards a third person perspective. Our science as well, also, it's completely oriented towards a third person perspective. And I know the Dalai Lama has been trying to sort of, you know, make a case for a first person science. And I think that, Abhinavagupta's use of subjectivity is actually a wonderful entree into sort of really thinking about how we can have understand a way of thinking about material in a rigorous way that actually still draws on a first person perspective. And so Abhinavagupta's idea of ahanta is really a sort of wonderful way to think about this. So I'm hoping people will sort of think about that as well. Also, there's been some recent research around a first-person perspective. Lynn Rutter Baker, who I've used her in the book as well. Also, so contemporary Western thinkers trying to sort of figure out, you know, how do we get around these ideas? Is, you know, what is the only way you can think about science or even philosophy in a rigorous way? Is it really confined simply only to a third-person perspective? That's the other thing I would like people to as well take away from the book.
Is this work that you're continuing? What's next for you?
yes. Part of what I'm working on right now, I have now none of this really appears in the book. I think I make a couple of references to it as, but that's about it. But because I didn't want to sort of make the book too, and the book is already sort of trying to bring together sort of disparate fields. You know, I'm talking about contemporary new materialism, and I'm also talking about Abhinavagupta's panentheism, and you know his ideas of ahanta, subjectivity, his ideas of chamatkara and wonder. And so I didn't want to sort of make it even more complicated. So, but I have done work on a contemporary neuroscientific theory called integrated information theory. So I have one article out, and another article is going to get published this year. Another is a chapter in a book on panentheism. And I was actually surprised. So these are neuroscientists. People who are working on this theory is this guy named Giulio Tononi. He's an Italian neuroscientist. I think he's at Wisconsin, maybe. And so I read a paper which was a critique of this theory, basically saying, look, you guys are really talking about a first-person perspective in your science, and you just should just fess up and sort of acknowledge that, because it'll make your thinking a lot more solid. And then I was surprised, within about 2 years, they really changed the way they were presenting the theory, and had moved away from the sort of, you know, tiptoeing around the idea of subjectivity, and came right out and said, this is about subjectivity. And about that same time, I started getting emails from this journal, which I really like, a science journal called Entropy, which is a journal that's, you know, it's just a really cutting edge science journal. And I like them because they also will include sort of more theoretical humanist type sort of articles. And they send me three different requests to sort of participate in an issue on integrated information theory, IIT 3.0. The first two, I was a little too busy trying to finish this book, and the third one I said yes, and then halfway through realized that they sent us an email saying, hey, you know, we have good news. You know, the publication fees are only going to be, we're going to get a discount on them. They're only going to be like $1,500. And I was like, okay, that's it. That's my entire research budget for the university. So in any case, but I do think that so that's what I'm working on in the future. And I am bringing Abhinavagupta into that a little bit as well also. And again, I think that, you know, this is a Western science, Western neuroscience, really can get a lot from the way that Abhinavagupta thinks about these things as well. So that's where I'm working on further. So I've got I have two things out. One's about to come out. One's already was published earlier, and I'm working on a third one as well on this, related to mental causality and Abhinavagupta's ideas of how does the mind cause something.
Fascinating. Well, perhaps we'll have the chance to discuss some of your future works. Thanks for appearing on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Raj. Yeah.
For those listening, we've of course been speaking with Dr. Lorelei Bernacki on The Matter of Wonder, Abhinavagupta's panentheism and the new materialism. Keep well, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating the interplay between immanence and transcendence. Take care.